Hey, Fedheads, welcome to another episode of Sharing Our Pairings. This is Sharing Our Pairings, episode 87, Warped Whiskey Wednesday. There's some alliteration for you. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon. I am back from assignment here to rock it with some whiskey tonight and some Warped cigars. We are broadcast around the world, brought to you by Gurkha Cigars. Visit your local tobacconist and find the Gurkha cigar that's right for you today. We're heard around the world, broadcasting the Armed Forces Radio Network, picked up on podcasts. You can download us from iTunes, Podbeam, Podcast, and the Play Store, and pretty much any podcast catcher that's on the planet. Check it out. Subscribe now. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host and probably warmer co-host right now, Rob Your Ass. Rob, what's going on down in sunny California, brother?
Hey, you know, it is quite comfortable here, actually. This is the best time of year in the East Bay. Come out here in October. I think that was, I'm not sure, when did you visit when you guys came out?
So I remember it being, I think it was like April and May, and it was supposed to be the absolute wrong time to come.
Yeah, you got there right at the beginning.
And yeah, so I mean, what was funny is, you know, everyone was talking about the, and we're getting way off topic right off the start, but we can do whatever we want. We've had 2 weeks now. I wasn't on last week, so whatever.
Yeah.
Just fast forward.
Gotta catch up.
At any rate, it was supposed to be all foggy and kind of, you know, muggy and cold and blah, blah, blah. And we kind of got the, like, we came down just at the time of a heat wave. So, like, you know, it was in the, like, I want to say high 70s, low 80s, and there was no fog on the bridge. We went out to the island to the
Alcatraz.
Prison. Yeah, the Alcatraz. And it was actually perfectly fine for temperature until, you know, got sort of the sun went down and then dropped like a stone. But we were very fortunate for the weather we got, for sure.
Yeah, this is, yeah, you guys were. It was unseasonably warm when you guys came. This is the best time of year to be out here, man. It's, you know, 75, 76 degrees, sunny. It's got that nice smell of fall in the air. Fall is absolutely my favorite time of year. So things are good here, man. It's funny, when I logged on to the show before we started about 10 minutes ago, I see John and his jacket and his sweatshirt and his beanie, and I was like, yeah, it looks like Canada. I mean, it's just crazy, man.
I get some thermals going for the Jimmies, you know?
You guys go zero to hero when it turns into winter down there. That's
well, and the funny part is, you know, if we had the show 2 days from now, so really, actually, even tomorrow, it's going to go from really, you know, 47 degrees to like 68 degrees. And I tell you, the difference between 47 and 68 when you're sitting outside for 9.5 is night and day. It uh-huh. really is.
You True know, story.
Whatever. You just dress for success, something.
It's something dress to impress. I don't know. But yeah, no, man, things are good. And we got some rain coming this weekend too. So I bought a new camera. That's coming tomorrow. I'm very excited.
These are exciting times.
Yeah, so it's all good, man.
And of course, shout out to the fellows from Developing Palettes, Aaron and June, who drank in for me last week. It was a great show. If you haven't checked it out, make sure to download that podcast episode. I had a good chuckle on the road. It was very entertaining. They're good hosts, and it was a good show.
Yeah, they do a good job, and it is funny, man. Literally, Aaron lives like 5 minutes from me, and I never see the guy. And he did invite me to his birthday, and I did not go.
I think that speaks a lot about you, Rob.
No, he's got a kid, relatively young still.
That makes a big difference.
So it's, yeah, and, you know, especially during the summertime, it's difficult for me with baseball, which we're not going to talk about, but
Persona non grata.
Absolutely. But
let's talk about something exciting, which is some Warped cigars. And I feel like we've had Warped on the show, but we've only had Warped maybe one other time that I can think of. And I think it was like either early this year or late last year. So for our listeners who are tuned in and want to find that out, make sure to find that. And let me know, because I can't even remember what show. But we definitely didn't do this one. This is the I'm doing the Warped Futuro Selección Suprema. And I'd previously reviewed the 109, which is this is kind of one of those cool showdown type projects, which Kyle Gallis did with Max Fernandez of Casa Fernandez. And Max did the 109. So it's the same blend, just in a different Vitola. And then Kyle did this one. What was funny is originally I only got the 109. I really, really liked the 109. And Kyle said, you know, if you really like the 109, you should really try my blend. It's a heater. Like it's got... I was not expecting this cigar to be this strong, and it is like full plus, not for strength, but for flavor profile. This thing is dialed to 110% right off the get-go. 5 5/8 by 46 is a true Corona Gorda. uses a Nicaraguan wrapper binder filler, and it's got that Aganorsa. That's what makes it so magical, that Aganorsa tobacco from A.J. Fernandez. And I'll tell you, man, it's like I'm reaching for my whiskey every puff because it's a heater. What do you got going on there?
I'm going with – actually, I didn't have any of the Futuros, so I'm going a little bit different here. I'm going with the Skyflower.
And that's such a good cigar.
Yeah, this is I think the second one that I've smoked. And I'm not even exactly sure what size I'm smoking here. It's about a 50 ring gauge, I guess. So about like a 5.5 by 50, something like that. I'm not exactly sure the sizing, and I can't seem to find a list of them here where I'm looking online. It's got the Jalapa Valley grown Corojo 99 wrapper, Nicaraguan Corojo 99, excuse me, and Criollo 98 fillers with a Nicaraguan binder. So Nicaraguan Puro, and it's got a lot of nice flavor to it, some richness, a little bit of spice, but more like a baking spice, you know? Yeah. Definitely in my wheelhouse, like most of the Warp stuff is, right? It's flavor forward. It's not too strong. It's not going to blow your palate out. Everything from Warped, I feel like, is the kind of cigar that you could smoke back to back.
Yeah.
Where it's, I'm not getting blown out by anything. It's kind of a sin that we haven't paired this particular cigar, at least in a show featuring this particular cigar before, because it is a fantastic blend. What, I think it came out in 2014. I think, maybe wrong.
Sounds right.
Maybe 2015, but it's been around for a little while. And it, their availability comes and goes, like most of the Warped stuff I've found. You can, certain times of year, it's in stock, and then, you know, it goes away for a little while, and then it comes back, and it goes away, and then it comes back. So it's not a limited release by any means, but I happen to be looking here. I don't know if the SigFed store has them in stock, but I can. It certainly looks like where I'm pulling this information from is Corona Cigar Company, because they were the first one who came up.
And great shops.
Yeah, they are a great shop located out in Florida. This is okay. So this is I'm smoking. It's a 5 5/8 by 48.
That's my size.
Yeah.
I think Kyle has come out multiple times and said he doesn't want to blend anything bigger than a 50 ring gauge, and, you know, go away if you want something bigger than a big. And I respect that.
Mm-hmm. That's one thing I like about Warped, is they kind of he kind of does what he wants to do, and if you like it, great, and if you don't, that's okay too. You know, at least that's a feeling that I get, and it's been pretty successful as far as I can tell. So good for them, and it's nice to see them see him working real closely with Casa Fernandez. And I think everything that they're doing now is out of Casa Fernandez. I may be speaking out of turn, but I think we did a review on this. I wasn't involved in it. I feel like Jared reviewed this for some reason.
I'm pretty sure I reviewed it. I can't remember if I got in a group review, but I know I smoked it. And I mean, it was, I mean, like, again, like everything, I feel like, you know, I'm just wax poetic about Warp for a second. I feel like the worst cigar they produce is still really good. So like, if you take the average Warped, they're excellent. And you know, I smoke a lot of cigars, and there's a lot of really great manufacturers. And for, you know, we talked about it when we talked to him at the IPCPR in 2014, the quality level of product he was putting out from the very start was unheard of.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I know the camera's still sticking on you. I can't seem to find a review of the Skyflower here, so maybe we didn't.
Well, what's funny is when I was rummaging my humidor, I got sent a Skyflower by a Redditor who bombed me. And I remember looking at him like, no, I'm going to save that for a special occasion. Rob probably doesn't have one of those because, you know, it's a couple of years now. And there you go, busting out that Skyflower.
Yeah. Okay, let me see. Maybe now I'm looking here. We might have, just bear with me here. Oh, geez, there's a lot of links for Skyflower. Wow, this is a popular cigar on SigFed.
I mean, the pricing isn't insane, right? Like you look at a cigar product like that. That's, I mean, for the longest time, it was you had some rolling out of Al Teton, I believe, and you would expect a cigar like that to be $12-13. But he kept the pricing kind of affordable for you know, I wouldn't even call it boutique. I'd call it like ultra boutique. And to get a cigar of that level of quality and not pay $13 for it, I mean, that's, you know, big Ben.
Well, I hate to throw you under the bus here, but I happen to be looking right at the price. Uh-oh. I don't think this one came. I think this is a Casa Fernandez blend, if memory serves. I may be incorrect, but it's $12.50 for the 5 5/8 by 48, which I believe is what I'm smoking here. But but still, it's not a cheap cigar by any means. Oh, there was a group review back in 2015.
Yeah.
So let's see, you ran it, and I wasn't involved in this one. So
I want to say I'm gonna go back in my brain. I want to say I rated that a 92 or a 93.
And you guys smoked the Grand Corona, same thing I'm smoking. You rated it a 91 box split.
What was I thinking?
The tuna he gave it a 92 box purchase. So it came down as a 91.5, obviously, on the group score there. And
I feel like that might be low, frankly.
And this is 2015, so this must have been a 2015 release.
Or late 2014, we just didn't get around to it.
True.
But just a quick shout out, because we are sort of vendor neutral, even though this is being broadcast on CigarFederation.com. I actually picked these up off of a small batch when the last time I was down in Vegas, which was not too long ago. I got some of these and the Cortos shipped to me. And I got to say, I've been smoking the Cortos like they're not going to be in production anymore. And that was the other cigar I was thinking of going with tonight. But I'm going to do a review of the Corto. And quite frankly, it's amazing. I mean, I wish I had bought a bundle because I'm going through them so fast. And like you say, I can smoke a Corto. Boy, that was really good. I'm going to smoke another one and go back to back. And quick.
And that's the thing that I love about their cigars is it's nuanced, but there's a lot of flavor there, and there's nuances if you want to look for them, right? If you want to be the guy who's sitting down and focusing on a cigar and trying to pick out certain flavors, you can, by all means, you can do that and enjoy yourself and find plenty to look for. But if you're just smoking a cigar and, you know, you're BSing with your buddies or whatever, you can smoke this, your palate's still ready to go at the end, and you can fire up another one. There's not too many cigars or too many cigar companies, I would say, that produce cigars like that on a regular basis, of cigars you can go back to back with without, you know, whoa, that's way too much nicotine, or whoa, that was just my palate just blown out. Padron is one that pops into my head. Those Padron 64s fired up all day long.
All day long.
Yeah, this falls right in that range for me.
So I just want to remind our audience, you're tuned. I know we've been talking about Warp for 15 minutes, but they could. You're tuning to Sharing Pranks episode 87. Warped Whiskey Wednesday. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon, joined as always by my co-host, Robbie Rass. We're a broadcast around the world, picked up on the Armed Forces Radio Network, heard around the world. This segment is brought to you by Gurkha Cigars. If you can't find the Gurkha cigar you want, talk to your local tobacconist. They'll hook you up with this Gurkha sampler. There's lots of samplers out there. I find, for me, that's kind of how I started smoking back in the day, is I just kind of bought samplers until I found the cigars that were kind of right for me. And, you know, the nice thing about a sampler is you don't have to go deep on a 5-pack. You don't have to go deep on a box. You just get a single one. You go, that one was okay. This one's really good. This one's kind of medium. You know, really, that's how I started. And look where I am today.
That's exactly how I started smoking cigars. Just to begin with, my wife for Christmas one year bought me a 5-stick sampler and a 25-count humidor. She had no idea what she was getting herself into. But that was how I started. So samplers, I'm a big fan. Whether it's a sample, and samplers may be a thing that are less and less available as the FDA comes down. But
thanks, FDA. Way to ruin it for everybody.
Yeah, no kidding. Whether it's a sampler that's a brand specific, like you get, you know, 3 or 4 different Warp cigars, which that's going to be a pricey sampler, or if it's just, you know, a 5-stick sampler from a specific origin or whatever. That was how I got started. That's the best way for me as far as buying cigars and trying new stuff. That's the best way to go. Like the SigFed, I'll do a plug for the SigFed story. I get nothing out of it, but the Cigar of the Month Club.
Cigar of the Month Clubs are great.
Absolutely, yeah. And that may be going away too. So get in while you can.
On from our resident Lancero expert is recommending a cigar that's not a Lancero, but I totally endorse his message, which is buy the Maestro del Tiempo. Thank me. Boom. And I did in my my very expensive pack that arrived in the mail with a bill attached to it were some Maestro del Tiempos, and they're just incredible. They're amazing. But
now I did the review of that one this year, and I want to pull it up since we're on the topic. We'll get into the pairings here in a minute.
I feel like you gave the Maestro del Tiempo a 93 or 94.
It was a quite high scoring offense there from my Chateau Tiempo. And I smoked the Robusto. They called it the 5712. It's 4.5 by 52, which is, I really dig that size. I gave it a 93.
That's a good score.
93 box split. John, we did a group review. You gave it a 94. Mm. So yeah, we both really enjoyed that cigar. That just, and again, ton of flavor, not blowing out your palate. And a lot of nuance. That one had a lot of creamy notes to it, if I remember correctly, and a little bit of spice in there, some baking spice, kind of similar to the profile that I'm getting out of this Skyflower, although I think I would take the Maestro del Tiempo of the Skyflower.
So before I get into my first pairing here, I'll just mention some of the notes of the cigar. Started out with a lot of spice, like really in your face, and dialed back almost immediately, about a half inch in. And then I got into this. Aganorsa tobacco for me has this flavor that I can't describe in words, but when you taste Aganorsa tobacco, you know Aganorsa tobacco. And it's kind of like this combination of almost a barbecue flavor mixed with chocolate. So it's like a very savory chocolate flavor. And that's kind of where the first third is settling in. And I mean, it's an amazing flavor. It's rich, it's complex, but like you said, and we've been saying for 15 minutes, it doesn't blow your palate out. It just makes you want to smoke more.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. That barbecue kind of chocolate flavor. And I know the flavor you're talking about. To me, it's just almost like a salted chocolate.
Yeah.
You know, and it's sweet, but not super sweet. It's savory, but not super savory. It's rich, but not super rich. Like it's just right. Yeah, and that is actually a pretty good way to say it. The barbecue, but chocolate. So it's a little bit tangy, a little bit smoky, a little bit sweet, a little bit salty. That's a good way to put it.
She good.
Yeah, indeed. So let's jump in.
Let's jump in because I've already got I'm already half a dram down, and we haven't even really talked about the first pairing. It's just, you know, whiskey and the cigar kind of goes hand in hand. So I'm going back. Now, I think June had the Yamazaki 18, but some of us aren't the deep money bags like June there for the Yamazaki 18, which I think at last retail, I think was going for close to $400 a bottle, if you could find it. This is the Yamazaki 12, which is the kind of the whiskey that really put Japanese whiskey on the map, although it was on the map for a lot of people before that. Of course, owned by Suntory Beam, or Beam Suntory, I should say. It was the first commercial distillery opened in Japan in 1923. And we've talked about it time and time again. I'm not going to go into super detail, just mention that it's located in Shimamoto province in Japan. And what's cool about the distillery, so we'll talk a little bit about the distillery rather than the history, is if you take a visit of Yamazaki and you can pay for the sort of advanced tasting, one of the cool things is, first of all, I think they have like 9,000 bottles on display, which is, I mean, that'll make you lose your mind right there.
It's a lot of bottles.
But if you pay for the advanced tour, they do a tasting, and your choice, and I don't know how many they let you taste, maybe until you fall over, but you can taste 70 varieties of whiskey. And there's not a lot. I've been to a distillery. I've heard of distillery tastings. Not a lot of distilleries that will allow you to taste up to 70 varieties of whiskey. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's dangerous.
Dangerous.
I mean, have the ambulance on standby. That's
So as you were mentioning last week, most Japanese whiskeys come in around 43%. That's kind of the magic number for Japanese whiskey. They talk about the nose being peach, pineapple, grapefruit, clove, candied orange, vanilla, and Mizunara wood, which is kind of a generic description. Mizunara, for me, really brings a lot of that tropical fruit to the table. And off the nose, they get a lot of honeyed orange. And not, you know, sometimes they talk about orange, a lot of people might conjure sort of a bitter orange. And this is kind of that sweet orange, you know, and that really rich, pungent orange flavor, which I really love. And then, like I said, it's got that nice honeyed character underneath it. They say the palate is coconut, cranberry, and butter. I don't think I get any of that, I'll be honest.
Coconut, cranberry, and butter. That's interesting.
I don't get that at all. I get sort of a nice baking spice. It's almost like approaching a sherried spice, but without that heat to it. A lot of complexity. I get a lot of vanilla. And then I got a lot of nondescript tropical fruit. So maybe like a little bit of mango, a little bit of passion fruit. And it's all very balanced. I mean, if you're not a fan of whiskey in general, you want to start out with a whiskey that's, you know, I wouldn't call it non-offensive, but kind of walks you around the flavor map, the Yamazaki 12, if you get your hands on it, is a pretty good way to approach whiskeys because it's very easy drinking. I mean, like I said, I'm already half dram down. Hold up the color there. You can see it's kind of got that amber gold color to it. And she good. What are you pairing first there, Robbie?
I'm going highfalutin, man.
Did this turn into a highfalutin show and nobody told me?
It did. Well, it kind of did on accident. And it's all thanks to you, John. You always hook me up with these samples. And today I just grabbed three random sample bottles and these little guys right here. And John, you hooked me up with like maybe, I don't know, 20 at IPCPR. So again, I appreciate it.
We got a show to run.
Yeah, absolutely. And without you, we couldn't be doing these. I'd be doing the same whiskeys every week. So
thanks, oil and gas, John.
Yeah. Yeah. My collection is nowhere near as yours, nor near as deep. So this week I'm going with, now last week I did the Takatsuro Pure Malt.
Which
John, you talk about, is one of your favorites. And I'm on the hunt for a bottle of that now. That definitely needs to be in my collection. This one is not going to make the cut into my collection because not that it's not going to make the cut. It's just, I'm just going to be frank. I don't have the money to pick up a bottle of this stuff. I'm going with a Takatsuru 21-year-old.
Woo!
Takatsuru Pure Malt 21. Now this is a legit bottle of whiskey. Now, the one thing that, John, you were saying, you were comparing the Pure Malt and the 21-year Pure Malt. And,
After the fact, sadly. Yeah,
after the fact. And we'll get to that later. But this is the Takatsuru 21. It's 43% ABV, that magic number. It was crowned World's Best Blended Malt Whiskey in 2010 at the World Whiskey Awards. So there you go. It's a fabulous whiskey, blah, blah, blah. 21, or it's got, yeah, so it's a blend of 21-year whiskeys.
Minimum 21.
Yeah, minimum 21. It comes out of Nikka. And we've talked about that a lot. So we'll go into the tasting notes here. I'm flying a little bit by the seat of my pants as far as these notes are concerned. For me, on the nose, I definitely get, there's definite oak factor, wood factor in there. And there's kind of a round, muted fruit sweetness, almost like a melon sweetness. Maybe a little bit of vanilla on the nose as well. Very, very nice. When we were cracking these bottles open and I was asking John to translate his chicken scratch on the bottles here so I could figure out what it was, I poured it and took a nose and it was just, wow, it's something that I really want to drink once I take a nose of it. We're here on Master of Malt. They say plenty of influence of oak with notes of prunes and soy sauce. So they're telling me that there's going to be some savory notes on there. I'm not really getting a lot of savory on the nose. Cocoa, espresso beans, and almost a touch of anise. On the palate, spices, black pepper, loads of tangy sherry, absolutely. Hints of turmeric. I have no idea what turmeric tastes like, and other spices. Ground ginger, mixed peels, and hints of marmalade are what they're telling me I'm going to get on the palate. I'm not getting a ton of the spice, frankly, on the palate. I get that sherried spice and that rounded sherry flavor that I really do enjoy. It's not super overpowering, but it's there. That hints of marmalade, I'm going to take that as that little bit of fruity note that I'm getting there, but there's still that soft sweetness on the finish. A little bit of spice. It stings the tongue a little bit. It's got a little bit more of a kick than most of the Japanese whiskeys that I've tried that are at that 43% ABV. So far, though, the pairing is quite, quite awesome.
So you guys, last week we're talking about ways to taste whiskey, and Gene was talking about how he got scolded a little bit at a tasting for how he was tasting, which, you know, I don't know if that's classy or not. I guess it's good if someone kind of walks you through that. That's good. I don't know if that's good that they scold you or not, but regardless, one of the things I like to do, especially, I mean, it takes your palate a while to acclimate the whiskey, even if it's 43%. What I typically do is I leave a little bit of whiskey in my glass after I'm done and come back, because I'll find that my palate and my nose will be supercharged and I'll get a ton of flavors that I wasn't getting previously. But sometimes with the, you know, 18 year plus whiskey, I'll hold it in my mouth for a little bit, like not long, but like 5 or 6 seconds, and I'll kind of breathe through my nose while it's holding my mouth. And that when I swallow, and the whiskey then evaporates, I get a ton more flavors that I wasn't necessarily getting. And like I said, it does take a little while. I mean, you just go in and shock your palate right off the start. It's tough for your palate to pick up a lot of nuances in the older whiskeys.
Yeah, I'm going to be an inch and a half into the cigar. I'm getting a very pronounced, very, very pronounced note of hazelnut on the retrohale. And hazelnut for me has a very, very distinct flavor, very specific. There's that, if I get a whiff of it, you know exactly what it is. And it's sometimes I like it, sometimes I don't. In this cigar, it's almost becoming overpowering, frankly. And I think that some of these spice notes that I'm getting out of this whiskey are enhancing that hazelnut. And when I go with it, you take a sip, take a draw of the cigar with that retro, you take another sip, that spice, they're calling that black pepper. I'm starting to get that now. I'm starting to get more of that spice out of the Takatsuru 21. And that that rounded sherried flavor with that spice is really kind of kicking up, and it's bringing in almost like a spiced chocolatey note, which is kind of interesting because I'm not getting any chocolate out of the cigar and I'm not getting any chocolate out of the whiskey itself, but they're combining to give me that. and I'm really kind of digging it. It's coming out of nowhere, but that rounded spiced chocolate, and then you throw that hazelnut on top of it. It's like dessert, man. This is a high end pairing that I wouldn't thumb my nose at by any means. This is I'll probably never be able to do it again, but this is pretty awesome.
You never know. Just a reminder to your audience, you're tuned into Shanghai Pairing episode 87, Warped Whiskey Wednesday. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon, here with my co-host, Robbie Rass. We're a broadcast around the world, picked up on pretty much every podcast app on the world. So make sure to tune in on podcasts, subscribe, get our weekly shows, both Sharing Our Pairings, Cigar Chat, One Embargo, and Pipe Dummies. Maybe not so much Pipe Dummies, but everything else. We're doing a little Warped Pairing. I'm doing the Warped Futuro Selección Suprema. Rob's going with the Warped Skyflower, and we're having a good time. We're doing some whiskeys. Started out with a little Japanese whiskey just to kick things off here. And now we're going to kind of, or at least I'm going to move up. I think you're going to move up. If I remember what we were talking about pre-show, I'm going with something that I've not featured on the show before. And really, this is my, and I know I'm kind of on a bottle freeze, but this was the, I've been working for 2 weeks straight, opening up new cigar stores back to back, and Daddy needs some whiskey. And I saw this on the shelf. Actually, it's kind of a quick, funny story. So I was so excited that I grabbed this off the shelf and forgot that it's got a magnetic top to it. And I dropped the bottle and I managed to sort of catch it and slow it down before it hit the floor so it didn't break. Otherwise, it would have been a very expensive mistake on my part. Fortunately, the bottle's intact. This is the Dalmore Cigar Malt Reserve. And, you know, we talk about beverages that are really designed to be paired with cigars.
Cigar malt, huh?
Cigar malt. It was designed from scratch to be paired with cigars. And you don't say that a lot about whiskeys. Certainly we've talked about beers in the past that have been designed to pair with cigars. We've talked about maybe a bourbon, but we've never talked about a particular whiskey that was specifically designed to be paired with cigars. This one is. And you can see that I certainly made a dent in the time that I was opening a store. That's the kind of weeks I've been having. A little bit about Dalmore, because we've not really talked about them on the show, I don't think, in the past. They're a Northern Highlands distillery. They're very north. They're actually located north of Inverness. And if you look at a map of Scotland, that's very north. They were founded in 1839, which is, that goes back a long, long time. They use the Alness River as their water source. Now, one of the things that's interesting about the Alness River is I believe it's got a really high calcium content, so it adds a different flavor to the whiskey that you might get from a different water source. A lot of the water sources in Scotland are very spring, very pure, very balanced and soft. Because they've added a lot of the stills over the years, they're really in the top 25 for whiskey distilleries for production, and they've kind of made a resurgence. The people that bought them out kind of have really tried to put them back on the map. In 2011, they spent over £1 million sterling to overhaul the distillery and visitor center to kind of make it a little bit more presentable. So if you're up in Northern Scotland, you want to visit a distillery, they spent a few ducats on the distillery. What I'm drinking tonight, like we said, is the Cigar Malt Reserve. You can see it's got a really dark color, almost tobacco, actually. Maybe that's just a little bit of getting in my brain there. It's at a very odd ABV. I don't think I've ever had a whiskey at 44%. Not 43, not 46, not 45, 44. I don't know what that means, but it's at 44. And they initially age it in American white oak, ex-bourbon cask, which is quite popular, and then 30-year-old Matsalam. I don't know what Matsalam is, but it's a type of Oloroso sherry casks. And, I mean, Daddy loves sherry casks, so that sounds great. And then they finesse it in premier Cru Cabernet Sauvignon wine barrels. Now, our Breeks, pardon me. Now, normally I'm not a fan of a lot of wine finishes. There are some very big standouts on the market. This one, I think, you know, really they're going, like I said, for a balance. They're looking for a flavor profile to match with cigars. And you talk about the nose being cinnamon, vanilla, and red fruits. Definitely get the cinnamon. It's almost like a cinnamon red hearts. And maybe some stewed fruit off the nose. I'll talk about the palate in a minute. But they say it's tropical fruits, banana toffee, vanilla ice cream. I definitely, obviously I've sampled this bottle a lot. It's got a lot of vanilla, but it's also actually got a lot of leathery notes to it, which I like. And, you know, one of the things I don't like in my cigars is leather. So it's interesting. I like leather in a whiskey when paired with a cigar. So we'll see how this stands up to the Futuro. Rob, what do you got on deck for number dose?
So That you're drinking now sounds fantastic. I was going to say fantastic and phenomenal at the same time, and it came out as So we'll move forward. Again, I'm not messing around here with the second pairing, and again, it comes out of one of John's bottles here. As you can see, this is a little bit darker. This is the Takatsuro Pure Malt here, and this Takatsuro Pure Malt 21. This is the Aberfeldy 21, and holy business, this is quite freaking tasty. Launched in October of 2005, 21-year-old lies at the core of the Aberfeldy range. It's something of a flagship of the brand. Superb example of what the distillery can produce. Aberfeldy, we've had him on before. Talked about him a little bit. It's a Highland whiskey in John, or a Highland distillery. You can probably talk more about that if you want to. If not, that's okay too. They say on the nose, it's honey and fruity, thick malts enlivened, good word, by a fresh and zesty quality. Now, to me, it's definitely thick. The nose, and when they say thick malt, I wouldn't have described it that way, but now that I hear those terms, definitely thick. There's definitely some honey on there, and there's definitely some fruit, kind of just a random fruit quality. I wouldn't go so far as to say it's citrus or stewed fruit or like a cherry, probably more on the lines of cherry than anything else, but like a dark flesh fruit, let's say that. And the nose is really, really appealing. It's a warm kind of feeling, right? This is a fall type of scotch. The palate, smooth, vanilla, undulating. I like the guy who wrote this. Enlivened and undulating, refined smoke. The finish peters out gently, perhaps ripe white peach notes that give a good wave of honey. This is perhaps the best whiskey I've ever had.
Wow.
It has characteristics, wow, of everything that I like about a whiskey. It's warm, it's kind of envelops the palate, right? It's not thick and overpowering. It's not too spicy, but there's a little bit of spice in there. It's got some sherried qualities to it, but it's not sherried. I don't think it's finished in any sort of sherried cask. It doesn't say that here. Maybe it is. But there's just that overbearing flavor almost. And overbearing sounds negative, but in this case, I mean, there's just so much freaking flavor here. There's a lot of fruit. There's a lot of honey. There's a lot of malt, and it all kind of comes together. And it's very rounded. I'm using all the same words I feel like I use a lot, but I don't know how else to say it. This is the kind of whiskey. It's super smooth. If I tasted this blind, I would tell you this is probably $200 a bottle. It just has that flavor to it where I feel like I could just sit down and sip on this forever. And it's not smoky at all. They say a little bit of undulating smoke. I'm not getting that. This is a fantastic, fantastic whiskey.
What I think is interesting about the Aberfeldy 21, and obviously, I've tasted a few whiskeys over the years, but what's interesting for me is that some of the older whiskeys, sometimes you get to a certain age statement and the whiskey becomes really soft. It's almost as if the wood characteristic starts to take over the actual spirit. Yeah. And the Aberfeldy 21 is the exact opposite. It's like the spirit became supercharged and it's just big. It's big in your face. It's when we talk about peated Islay whiskey, you talk about being full plus in your face. And this is an example of a distillery where the spirit is full in your face, but it's full in your face with complexity. It's not full in your face blowing away with peat or anything like that. It's just like, all of these flavors are dialed right up, and yet somehow they manage to be balanced and nuanced and complex. And yeah, it's a bottle that kind of sits in my cabinet. It doesn't get a lot of love because, unfortunately, when you crack a bottle like that, you kind of want to drink the whole thing, frankly.
I feel like I do this every week. I'm searching for a bottle myself. Here on masterofmalt.com, they have it for $123 a bottle, which, frankly, based on the flavor and how it's tasting, I'm not too upset about.
It's stupidly affordable. I remember we talked pre-show about, what a bottle like that goes for. And, I think we were talking in Cigar Federation chat before the show, people are talking about some of the older whiskeys from other companies. I mean, you can easily drop $250 ducats on a 21-year-old whiskey, and it's all right. I mean, there's a lot of really good 21-year-old whiskeys, but for that price, it's almost a steal. Like, I feel like it's a $300 whiskey masquerading as a $130 whiskey.
Yeah, and I looked at Bob Dog's comment in the chat room. He's like, the best with a bunch of question marks. Let me rephrase, because it's, I could say that it may not be the best whiskey that I've ever had. It's the best representation of this style of whiskey. It's not peated, so it's not going to be super smoky or anything like that. So comparing it to something, you know, like a Lagavulin or something like that, it's not really the same thing. You're pairing apples and oranges here. They're very different goals from those two types of whiskey. This, to me, is the kind of whiskey that I would want as almost like a cornerstone of my collection, right? It's something that once you crack it, John, I understand what you're saying, is you could go through it pretty quick, but crack it, always have that bottle there. Maybe you drink it on special occasions or, you know, maybe on a Wednesday when you feel like it, but it's the kind of bottle that it's like, okay, I'll buy this and then I'll build around it. Maybe this will be the crown jewel, so to speak, of my approachable whiskeys, and maybe I'll have something in the back that's a little bit more exclusive that I really only bring out on special occasions because that's fun. But this is the kind of thing where this is a really, really nice whiskey. You could drink it on a special occasion. You could drink it really whenever you want, frankly. You don't need a special occasion for it. The pairing so far is interesting, though. I feel like I'm getting a lot more out of the whiskey than I am out of the cigar. Really, all I'm getting out of the cigar now is that almost pungent hazelnut flavor on the nose, or on the retro, which is nice, and I think it goes well. It adds some spice to this this Aberfeldy 21, which doesn't have a ton of spice to it, but I don't know if the pairing's really working out. This is a phenomenal whiskey, but I'm not convinced on the pairing just yet.
So what's funny about that is this Dalmore cigar malt goes well with a lot of different cigars, but it's not quite meshing up for me either. I'm not sure if it's just because, you know, again, the Warp cigars, the blends tend to be a lot of nuance and a lot of complexity and, you know, there's some subtle dials there. And in this case, I think it's almost too subtle for the whiskey because it's, you know, in a way the whiskey's kind of getting lost in the cigar and the cigar's kind of getting lost a little bit in the whiskey. Both are excellent on their own. Together, they're not really doing a good job of complementing each other. Like I said, I've certainly had a lot of this cigar malt, and it's kind of an easy go-to for pairing, but I feel like, you know, this is not the best example of what a whiskey and a cigar pairing can be. I'm still getting the vanilla. I'm still getting a bit of leather. The sherry notes are dialed down because, you know, we talk about sherry whiskeys, and sherry whiskeys can be really, really, really in your face, and you don't necessarily want that when you got a nuanced cigar because sherry can easily overpower a cigar. But it's good. It's just, you know, I feel like I've almost taken a step down going from the Yamazaki, which was along the same lines as the cigar, was nuanced and balanced and had a lot of subtlety to it, to something that's less subtle. Great whiskey, great cigar, maybe not the best combination.
Yeah, you know, the more that I puff away, it's all gone. Obviously, I enjoyed it. It's the profile of the cigar is getting a bit more creamy on the finish now, and that hazelnut is kind of dying down a little bit. And I think what you were just saying about how a sherried whiskey can be really, really in your face. The flavors of this Aberfeldy 21 they're amped up. I mean, they're right up in your face. So I think it might be overpowering the cigar a little bit. And I never really thought about that, but this Warped is so smooth and nuanced and balanced that this Aberfeldy may be a bit too much for it. Frankly, I didn't think that would be a problem. When you start talking about a Nicaraguan Puro, you don't think it's going to get blown out by a Scotch, but it might be that the flavor on that Aberfeldy is so palate-consuming, if you will, that it's kind of running the show, and really all I'm getting from the cigar is the retrohale. And now that I've taken a couple of puffs of the cigar since I finished the Aberfeldy, I still have a little bit more that I'm going to hold back for later, but that might be the case. I'm starting to get more out of the cigar now. I'm getting a bit more of that richness, which I was losing. I'm getting more of that creaminess on the finish, a little bit of that baking spice that's in there, and that hazelnut is dying down a little bit. So I'm curious to see how this next pairing goes, because I John and I talked about this. I probably should have had this one first, because as far as John's telling me, it's the lesser of the three whiskeys, but it's definitely the strongest. I don't think I mentioned this Aberfeldy 21 is 40% ABV, so it's definitely on the lower end. Very, very approachable, fantastic. If you have the means, I highly recommend picking some up. My little ode to Ferris Bueller there. But anyway, great, great, great whiskey. Really one of my favorites that we've had on the show. Probably not the best pairing one.
Yeah, and I just want to echo the sentiment about the fact that it's a 21-year-old whiskey. And like I said, not a lot of people have had the opportunity to try a lot of 21-year-old whiskeys, but it is really shocking that a 21-year-old whiskey can bring that much flavor complexity in that level to the table. I mean, can you imagine something like that, that particular whiskey at 48% or 50%? I mean, it would darn near knock your palate off your head. Like, it's dialed right up. And that's not been my experience. Most 21s tend to be a lot softer. But I'll just remind our audience that you were tuned into Sharing Our Pairings episode 87, Warped Whiskey Wednesday. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon, joined by my co-host, Robbie Rass. We are broadcast around the world on the Armed Forces Radio Network. We're about to get into our last whiskey pairing of the night. Do you want to lead us off here, Robbie?
Yeah, I'll jump in. Sorry, I was looking up a little bit more info on this this Aberfeldy 21. I'm trying to figure out.
She's got you hooked now.
Yeah, she does. I'm looking around, and it was named the best Highland single malt whiskey at the World Whiskey Awards in 2014. So that's kind of a big deal. I'm just trying to see a little bit on the, it's made exclusively from barleys and milled, blah, blah, blah. I was just trying to see what kind of casks it was finished in. Bourbon casks that were previously used to mature sherry. So it is a sherry cask. There's definitely some sherry notes in there. Interesting. This is a phenomenal whiskey. So for my third and final whiskey, much lighter on the color spectrum, in beer we would say on the SRM spectrum, but I don't know what you say about whiskey. Is it the same thing? Is there a term for the color value? Do they assign color values for whiskey?
Not that I'm aware of, no. Okay. And I think part of the reason is because whiskeys can be colored. So they tend not to talk about the color of the whiskey. I think, you know, in a lot of cases, you kind of want to let the whiskey speak for itself, really.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. So this last one here is an interesting bottle, and John, maybe you can talk a little bit more about it. This is Arran 2004 Orkney Bear Barley. And there's a lot of terms in there that I don't necessarily understand, but it's Arran 2004, but it was bottled in 2014. So it's you called it a special bottle, and I'll read a little bit here about it. It's cask strength, 56.2%. And John, talk a little bit about cask strength when you get a chance, because I know we talked about that a little bit last week, and there wasn't really a defined answer, and it turns out there really isn't a defined answer about that, but we'll jump into it here in a minute. It's a single malt. It's cask strength. They list it as an island whiskey. What does that mean?
So it's from the Orkney Islands.
Oh. Well, there you go.
Yep.
Can you tell that I just, when it comes to whiskey, I know how to drink it. I don't necessarily know much about it. I mean, can you tell that?
We've talked about on the show about different regions of Scotland. And like I said, 20 years ago, that might have made a big difference. Like, you would have talked about a style that was Highland or a style that was Speyside. But that's kind of fallen off over the years, is really they're just trying to blend to a particular flavor. And a lot of different distilleries and regions, for lack of a better term, are blending outside of the region that you typically would expect from that flavor profile from that region. And yeah.
Okay. There's kind of an interesting story here about this particular whiskey. Let's see. Let me just kind of, again, I'm getting this from masterofmalt.com. This release sees the Isle of Arran, ARRAN distillers, teaming up with the University of the Highlands and Islands Orkney College to create this 10-year-old expression made from Bere barley. And I don't know anything about, or it's Bere barley. It's B-E-R-E. John, you called it Bear. It's a very old strain of barley introduced in Scotland over 1,000 years ago. The whiskey was distilled in 2004, left to mature in ex-bourbon barrels, which is why it smelled an awful lot like bourbon when I poured it, before being bottled at 10 years old in 2014. They made 4,890 bottles altogether. And for something that's that specific, that's a lot of bottles. I mean, yeah. I don't know. To me, it sounds like a lot of bottles. I don't know if it is or not. But for something that sounds that specific, the price on it was $61. That's kind of surprising. Again, you can't find it, or at least not here, because there was only so many that were produced. And they have zero tasting notes. Thanks for that, guys. Appreciate that. But that's just really interesting that they teamed up with the college. I think that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
But the note – sorry, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I was just going to say, now, one of the things I talk about is it's using Scottish barley. And I've heard from distillery masters various – takes on that. Some say that the barley makes a huge influence on the final spirit, but I've heard other distiller masters where I specifically sat down and said, how much does the bar, like, you know, talk about the romance of Scottish barley versus say Canadian barley, how much does that affect it? And I've flat out had distillery masters tell me, nah, it doesn't make any difference at all. Barley's barley. So there you go. Well,
those kinds of things. It's definitely different in beer because
very different.
The origin of the malts you're using in beer, it had a huge, huge impact on the flavor. So to hear that, the home brewer in my head says, "Whoa, wait a second! The barley or the malt that you're going to use has a huge impact on the flavor." But in this case, not so much. That's interesting.
Or maybe it does, depending on who you ask.
Yeah, fair point. Same thing when it comes to brewing. There are very few hard and fast rules. That's one thing that I've learned. They don't give me any notes here, and it's funny, John. When I first cracked this open, and I commented on this, that it smelled like a bourbon. It didn't smell like a Scotch whiskey. It smelled like a bourbon to me. Now, it has a much rounder, more sweet note to it than bourbon's got. That when you take a nose on bourbon, it's got that spice, and you know,
very spicy.
You know that you're nosing a bourbon, even if you don't know what somebody poured in your glass. You're gonna say, "Boom, that's bourbon," because, I mean, or you know, American whiskey, whatever the hell you want to call it. It has that nose to it. And now this smells much more like a Scotch or even a Japanese whiskey. It has that single malt. It has that rounded sweetness to it. A little bit of vanilla and that kind of muddled sweet fruit I like to call melon. The nose just is, it's almost generic as far as whiskey is concerned to me. It's just, yeah, I know that I'm about to sip on a Scotch that's not heavily peated. That's really all I'm getting from the nose at this point. I haven't taken a sip of it yet, but let's jump into John's last pairing. I think, are we running out of time here?
We still got 9 minutes. We got some time. So I'm going with, I think I featured this a few shows ago. This is the Ben Riech, and I apologize for the light here. I'm kind of working with my lighting apparatus here to make sure I'm lit for the rest of the night. But this is the Ben Riech Matured in Sherrywood. And I think it's a great example of how you don't have to have a crazy age statement to have a lot of flavor profile from a whiskey. And I think, you know, that's one of the things people talk about. They only drink older whiskeys. And your whiskey actually is a great example. It's a 10-year-old whiskey, but it's bottled at cask strength. And that means you're getting all the flavor of the whiskey. This Ben Riech, Matured in Sherrywood, it's not cask strength. And I'll talk about that maybe in the after dark, but it's 46%. So it is much, much higher than a 40 or 43. Ben Riech, we've talked about, it's a Speyside distillery founded in 1898. What I like about the distillery is they produce a wide variety of spirits. And I kind of talked about that, where you can't really stand on this is a Speyside whiskey anymore, because that changes. And Ben Riech is specifically doing that on purpose to try and confound what is considered a Speyside whiskey. They produce styles, everything from what you'd consider a true sort of sweet and floral and light Speyside, all the way up to heavily peated and everything in between. And they even do some wine finishes. And so this is an example of, they've taken a relatively young, by whiskey standards, spirit, and they've aged it in Oloroso and Pedro Ximenez sherry. So, you know, that's a lot of sherry, especially in a young whiskey, but it works. What I like about it is it's a great example of a sherried whiskey where the sherry doesn't overpower the spirit. So I get a lot of that rich stewed fruit and that sherry spice. I know you love sherry whiskey. I love sherry whiskey. And it's dialed to the right level where I get enough of the sweetness off the spirit and the sherry influence. And I get just enough spices off the sherry. It's quite balanced, and it's going really well. I kind of thought the sherry would overpower the cigar, but it's filling in a little bit because the cigar isn't what I would call sweet. It just, the spices from the sherry and the sherry notes with the fruit really serve to accent the cigar. And this is kind of what you want to do, or at least what I want to do when I'm pairing a whiskey with a cigar. I want the whiskey to support the cigar and vice versa. And while the cigar malt from the Delmar was good, this is kind of what I'm looking for when I'm pairing this particular cigar. It's balanced. It's nuanced. One is not overpowering the other. They're playing off of each other. Very, very complimentary, and I'm enjoying it so far.
So I don't know if I mentioned that this Aran Orkney Bear Barley 2004 is 56.2%. That's a big, That's a big jump considering the last one that I had, the Aberfeldy 21, was 40%. So that first sip was hot, very, very hot. And I don't know if people are watching on the YouTube, they can see the YouTube feed, if they can see my reaction, but it was pretty warm, spicy. As your palate comes around and acclimates, it's an interesting whiskey. I feel like, John, you may have been right. I probably should have had it first, and I would have gotten more out of it. But the pairing is actually going pretty well, considering. I'm surprised that something that has this high level of ABV is going to work with a cigar that I felt was overpowered by one that had a 40% ABV. So it just goes to show you that you just never really know. The cigar has taken on that rich quality that I liked from the beginning. Some woody notes are coming out in there as well. Some creamy texture to it. A little bit of that baking spice is coming back. Some cinnamon, like some nutmeg style. The hazelnut that I was getting is almost completely gone now, which is really, really interesting. The finish is taking on some sweet notes. A little bit of that chocolate is carrying over from before. So this cigar really has transitioned a lot from the beginning. And it has adapted to the different whiskeys that I'm drinking here. The flavor on this this Aran is, I don't know how to describe it. It's, let me take another pull here real quick.
Roger that.
It's smooth on the tongue, oddly enough. There's some burn on the finish. You feel it going down the throat. I mean, we're talking about 56% here. This is no joke. So you definitely get that. It's hitting the side of the tongue with a little bit of that spice and almost like a tannic kind of quality. You get more of that out of wine, really, than out of whiskey. But I don't know another way to explain it, but it has that kind of tannic, almost burn on the side of the tongue. It's nowhere near as refined as the other two that I was tasting. But at the same time, it does bring certain things to the table. It's just tough having to compare against those two 21-year-olds and then jump into this. It's you're right. I should have gone with this first. The pairing, though, is actually pretty good. I feel like it's propping the cigar up more so than anything else. I felt like the pairings and the others were a bit more complimentary. Definitely with the Takacero 21, that was the best. They elevated each other. I feel like this is really taking the cigar and putting it on the pedestal.
Well, and I think what's nice about it, at least in my mind, is that it's a great example of how, you know, the snob in me would probably normally pass up a 10-year-old whiskey. I'd just say, well, it's too young. Like, it's going to be too rough. It's going to be too harsh. There's not going to be enough nuance there. But that all changes depending on how you put it in the wood. And in this case, giggity, how the fact that it's cask strength makes all the difference in the world. You can have 10 or 12-year cask strength whiskeys that will outperform a 15-year-old whiskey. And, you know, I've talked about it. I would buy all of my whiskey at cask strength if I could, because you're getting the maximum flavor that whiskey can produce, and then you can bring it down if you want to. If it's too much of a heater, add a little bit of spring water or whatever, bring it down a little bit. But cask strength is everything, and it's a great example of how a 10-year-old whiskey outperforms its age statement and brings a lot more flavor to the table. Because if you had a standard 10-year-old whiskey at 40 or 43%, it would not taste even remotely as good as that particular one at cask strength.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I guess cask strength is something I don't necessarily understand, and we can get into it more later because I know we're probably up against it here at this point. But I think for me, I'll jump forward a little bit. And I don't, did we get into your last pairing?
I haven't really talked about it very much, but it's going really well. I mean, it's interesting. I chose to finish with it because it is sherry wood. And like I said, sherry can be a bit of a heater, but you know, it's a good finish because I think I chose the right lineup in the right order. It is a lot more of a heater than the other two, even though it's a 12-year-old, but it's got a lot of flavor without being too heavily sherried. I think I would definitely avoid with the Futuro Selection Suprema. I would absolutely avoid something too sherried, but something that's sort of, I would call this medium sherried, goes really well with the cigar. It's the right whiskey to pair with the cigar. The Yamazaki was absolutely a no-brainer. And I think if I were to talk about sort of my favorite pairings of the night, the Yamazaki kind of takes the cake. It was exactly what the cigar needed. Number two would be this the Benriach Sherrywood 12. a great number two and very close number two. And I, you know, I'll have to go back and try some of the other sherryed whiskeys they have, like maybe the Springbank 15 Sherrywood. It might be a little too hot for this cigar, but I'm willing to try it out. And then the Dalmore, the cigar malt, again, I really like that whiskey, but just not the right pairing with this particular cigar. I think it would go really well with a lot of other cigars I've got in my cabinet, just not this particular cigar.
Yeah, for me, it's the Target Zero 21. Target Zero Pure Malt 21, hands down, best pairing. And I think second would probably be the Iran, however you say it, the Iran 2004 Orkney Bear. That would probably be the second one. But it really elevated the cigar more so than anything else. The Aberfeldy 21, while it's phenomenal, I mean, it's nothing short of phenomenal. I will be looking for a bottle of that. Absolutely. There will be one of those I'm going to pick up the Aberfeldy and the Target Zero Pure Malt. Just Pure Malt. No age statement on that one. Those two are definitely going to be the next two bottles that join my personal cellar here. But unfortunately, the Aberfeldy did not pair very well with this particular cigar. I think that the thing that I'm leaving with from this show is how good this cigar is.
Yeah.
This Warped Skyflower is phenomenal. The size is perfect. It's the wrapper on this thing. It's like, it's velvety. And there's, you know, you smoke cigars that have, maybe the ring gauge is too big, or, you know, the wrapper is a little bit crunchy or kind of hard, or kind of abrasive. Maybe this is one of the most comfortable cigars I've ever smoked. The ring gauge at 48 is right where I want it to be. Look at the little, just a little cut off the top. I mean, you don't need to take a bunch off that. I actually just use a punch on mine. I find the punch is perfect for me, and I always go with the larger punch too. It just sits perfect in the mouth. It's very comfortable. Everything about this cigar is really, really nice. If I was involved in that group review that we did, I think you gave it a 91, Seth gave it a 92, I would have been right in that range, maybe even a little bit higher, maybe 93. It's right up there. If next time I see that these are available, it looks like they're kind of sold out at most places. Next time I see that they're available, I'm definitely picking up at the very least a 5-pack of this. This is a phenomenal, phenomenal cigar.
Absolutely. Well, thanks very much for all our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners who are out there, wherever you're stationed in the world. Hope you're staying safe. Hope you have a nice, safe weekend. And hope you've been entertained by this 1 hour of us talking about Warped Whiskey Wednesday. Hopefully something appeals to you and you have a chance to smoke a cigar when you've got some downtime. We'll be back next week at a regular scheduled time. Make sure to check out Cigar Chat tomorrow night at its normal time of 8 p.m. Eastern Standard. It'll be a good one. And as we say on Sharing Our Pairings, drink better, but drink less. Whiskey, whiskey, whiskey. I love whiskey.
Dude, I'm telling you, my dogs went apeshit for a minute there. I don't know. Somebody must have come up to the door or something, because Charlie never barks like that unless somebody comes to the door, and somebody must have been at the door. So
talking
Hopefully
about cask,
left a bag of money.
Yeah, give me your money. So talking about cask strength. So generally, and I'm sure I'm going to get corrected on this, but generally, really, what cask strength refers to is a whiskey that's gone from the barrel, directly from the barrel into the bottle, and it's not been, I don't want to use the word diluted, but really that's what you talk about. You talk about bringing it down from the cask ABV, the you know, science ABV, alcohol by volume. Or, you know, you can double it and call it proof if you want to, but I live in a world called ABV. And when you bring it down, you are taking away some of the essence of the whiskey. And the reality of the whiskey world is that most, almost, you know, 95% of the whiskeys that are out there are not, maybe even higher, not cask strength, because cask strength costs the distillery in bottles. You're reducing it by 10%. You know, every four casks or every four bottles, that's an extra bottle right there. That's a lot of money when you're talking about a product that's been sitting in a barrel for, I don't know, 15 years, 18 years, 21 years. That's a lot of money to be leaving on the table. But generally what it means is something that's bottled above 51%. Now, that's not necessarily all of, there's been some cask strengths that are around 48, 49% because it's lost alcohol over time. But in general, it's 51 plus. And I've certainly had some cask strength whiskeys that are pushing 63.5, 64.5 ABV. And I've had some cask strength whiskeys at 63.5 that you would swear are in the low 50s. So strength, you know, we talk about it in cigars. Strength doesn't necessarily... there's two dials. There's the complexity and strength of the flavor, And then there's the strength of, you know, the tobacco, in this case, the strength of the alcohol. And sometimes those two dials get confused. So you can have a cask strength that's dialed to 9 and the dialed to 10 in the flavor profile, but the alcohol doesn't burn you. And you can have the reverse. You can have something where the flavor profile maybe is sitting around a 6 or 7. The alcohol just burns your brain out. Yeah, cask strength. Love it.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same with cigars. You can have a really, really spicy cigar that isn't necessarily super strong from a nicotine content. And like you said, I think those two things get confused. This is random, but I'm kind of excited about this. I'm gonna be making a purchase from Small Batch Cigar here, apparently, because I'm looking for more of these warped Skyflowers, right? And so I went to Small Batch because they carry a lot of warped stuff. And right there on their homepage is the Casada 40th Classica Mix 6-pack.
Oh, son.
You get 3 of the Coronas, which that's one of my favorite cigars, probably of all time. That blend is phenomenal. And then now it's in a Petite Bellicoso, too. So you get 3 of each for $46.
That's the one that Manolo, when he was on Cigar Chat, he mentioned that tobacco, I can't even remember the date, but it went back like 20 years. It's got like 17 or 20-year-old tobacco in it, phenomenal. Which is no doubt what gives the complexity.
Oh, phenomenal, phenomenal cigar. I might have to pick one of those up. I didn't realize that they had the Petite Bellicoso. That must be a new one. That's a 4.5 by 40.
That's a nice size.
Yeah, you get 6 cigars for $46. That's not too bad. But I'm looking here to see if they've got some more of these warped, because more of the Skyflower needs to be in my life. That is for sure.
Yeah, I mean, for me, and you know, not to send too much love out to warp, but frankly, I know I can comfortably order pretty much anything warped. And I'm going to have a great cigar experience. I just am. I mean, everything that they blend, I like. I either like or I love. And I can pretty much buy them blind at this point and have a great cigar experience.
Yeah, I'm looking here. They've got some interesting stuff there. The Via Sombra, I know you did a review on that. I haven't smoked that one yet. That was the other cigar. That's
good.
That one hasn't come out yet. That was one I thought about doing tonight. I probably should have, just given the fact that it's new. but this was... The Skyflower was easier to find in my humidor.
Fair enough. So we're not talking baseball.
Nope.
But we've got a few weeks of football to catch up on because unfortunately that's just the way it worked. So I'll just give a quick recap. We've been doing a football pool. We're into this will be their 6th week. We haven't had updates since the 3rd week, so I'll just kind of blast through the 3rd and 4th week, not bore anybody out there. If you're not really into football, feel free to drop off. We appreciate you tuning in to sharing our pairings, but we've been playing it every week. And through week 3, I was kind of leading a little bit, except for Dave Burke, who runs the Cigar Jukebox. If you haven't tuned into or subscribed to Dave's cigar podcast, you absolutely should. It's very entertaining, especially if you like music. He takes an interesting take on cigar podcasts. Great friend of the show. I've been on his show many times. We're going to find a way to get Dave on our show in the near future, time permitting, because he's in Australia, so it's a weird time for him. Anyway, last week you and I tied up. You beat me for the week. In fact, you were the big winner for week 3. You ended up the winner. It was a bit of an odd week. You only had 9 picks right.
Out of how many?
Out of, what is it, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16 picks.
That's not bad. 9 out of 16, that's pretty good.
It was a rough week. Normally you would expect...
And I picked the 49ers.
Yeah. Pick the 49ers.
Yeah, why not?
Why not? At any rate, you won the week with 9 picks. I fell into last place with 7 picks. Dave Burke, who has been crushing us really to date, matched up with Bob Dog both at 8 picks. For the tally of the year, that put Dave in week 3 at 31 picks overall. You and I tied out at 26. Going into week 4, week 4 was just a shit show. So out of 15 picks, Rob, you and I got 5 picks right. 5 picks.
Wow.
Yeah. So Dave, extending his lead, got 10 picks
right.
Holy
shit.
Holy shit is right. Dave, if you're listening, I know you are, my brother, go and buy a lottery ticket for the, because you can get, and I don't know if they have it in Australia, but I know over in Canada and the United States, they have lottery picks you can do for sports picking. absolutely recommend you do that, because he extended his lead to 41 picks overall. You and I still tied at 31 picks. It was just, it was a bad week. We went 49ers, Cowboys beat the 49ers. It was just, the games were all very close down to the end. No one picked the Jaguars over the Colts. It was really a rough week. I kind of found my legs back last week. We lost another game, so it was 14 games. I managed to pick up a couple games. I managed to win the week with 11 picks. You were number 2 at 9. And in your face, Dave, you were down at 7 picks for the week. Bob Dog, I didn't get any picks from you, so unfortunately, brother, I didn't get you on the list. Dave still wins overall. He's sitting at 48 picks right. I'm in a dastardly number 2 at 42, and you're at 40. So it's been a rough few. The last couple weeks have not been good. Week 3 and week 4 were bad.
Well, I'm going to redeem myself and start talking about the Cigar Media Association fantasy football standings. You will see that Cigar Federation is in first place at 5-0.
Hell yeah.
With an astounding 772 points scored.
Through 5 weeks?
Through 5 weeks.
Holy shitballs.
The team that is in, that comes in second at this point, I believe, the number 2 is I've Had That, which I believe is, that's Jordan Guttersom. That is, that's the son of Master Sensei. It's Master Sensei's son.
Okay, yep.
And I think that that's, and I'm not sure if that's a website or an app, but they talk about cigars. Hey, that's, I've Had That cigar.
Cigar Dojo, yep.
I'm not sure if it's affiliated with the dojo or not. I don't know the specs behind it, but they come in at 3-2 and they have scored 622 points. So we are a good 150 points ahead of the next team, in the league. 5-0. I'm just going to run down our lineup just to remind everybody who we're working with here. We have, Ben Roethlisberger, quarterback, last week had a great week. He is the number 2.
indeed, he did.
He did. He's the number
my,
2.
My shitty Jets.
The number 2 quarterback. On my bench, I have Matt Ryan, who's the number 1 quarterback. We have David Johnson, running back from Arizona. He's the number 2 running back on the year. We have LeSean McCoy, he's number 4. Also, both had great weeks last week. A.J. Green was our number 1 pick. He's the number 3 wide receiver overall. Not so great last week. Started Jarvis Landry at wide receiver last week. Didn't do too much. Our probably the best pick that we made in that draft, outside of drafting Ben Roethlisberger, probably like the 6th quarterback, was taking Greg Olsen at tight end, who had another phenomenal week as the number 1 tight end in all of football. A guy who I drafted, dropped, and then re-added was Jordan Howard, running back for your Chicago Bears. Had a great week last week. Picked up off the waiver wire the Viking.
I just like this pushback there. I don't think the Bears are mine. I don't think the Bears are ever going to be mine. Just throwing that out there.
Picked up last week, since we do have the Seahawks defense, who's been, they've been all right. But I picked up the shocking Minnesota Vikings defense.
Oh, wow.
Holy
you picked
crap.
Up the Vikings? That, yeah. I mean, I would start them for the rest of the season.
They're the number 1 defense. They had 17 points last week. From a defense, and if you've played fantasy football, you know how it works. From a defense, week 1, they scored 21 points. Week 2, they scored 14. Week 3, they scored 25. At Carolina, scored 25 points. Week 4, not so much, scored 7. Last week had 17 points. So they're just crushing it. Touchdowns. They've scored 4 touchdowns on the year through 5 weeks as a defense. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I will say about how good the Cigar Federation team is, most weeks our bench outscores the team we're playing against. On our bench, we have Alshon Jeffrey, Marvin Jones, who are like, you know, great wide receivers. Jimmy Graham, who's come alive. Matt Ryan's on the bench. Travis Benjamin, wide receiver for the San Diego Chargers. Christian Michael, the running back now for the Seattle Seahawks. Wow, for some reason that was escaping me. And the Vikings are on the bench this week because they do not have they're not playing. But yeah, running away with the division. Let's just go back through the schedule here, just because I'm redeeming myself a little bit. Week 1 had 157 points. Week 2, 119. And then we've settled into the 160s. Week three, 164. Week four, 168. Week five, 164 again. The week four against Team Cigar Dojo, 168-56.
Ouch.
That was a certified ass whooping. So it's been fun. It's been fun.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it does start with your draft, but as you say, you picked up the Vikings on, I assume, waiver wire, and I can't believe they were available.
Well,
that's crazy.
Full disclosure here, it's an eight-team league, so there's not – it's eight teams, so there's plenty of talent available. And I've made more roster moves than I think any other two teams combined, I think. So I'm probably the one who's paying the most attention. But for me, taking David Johnson in the second round instead of taking Devontae Freeman was the pick of the draft. David Johnson, by the way, on his own had 32 points last week.
Yeah.
So Ben Roethlisberger had 29, Greg Olsen had 27, and Jordan Howard had 24. So it's, again, this is a PPR league, so the scores are a little bit higher. But yeah, it's been fun.
So before we get into our NFL picks for week six, and if you want to participate, email your picks to surgeon@cigarfederation.com. We'll get to those picks next week. Unfortunately, I skipped over Jeff Madre. He had a good question here. He said, comparatively speaking, does the Dalmar cigar melt deliver on its promise to pair well with cigars? And although, you know, I talked about maybe not the best pairing tonight, in general, yes. I think you know, it's one of those things, if you're not a big pairer with whiskey, it's really hard to go wrong with the cigar malt because it really is designed from the ground up to pair well with cigars. Now, are there a lot of whiskeys out there that pair well with cigars? Absolutely. But, you know, I have to give some props to the Dalmore that this was one of those malts that designed from the ground floor to pair with majority of cigars out there. And I think, you know, if you have it in your budget to try it out, or, you know, even if there's a sample bottle available, try it out. I think it pairs really well. Jeff, thanks so much for your question. Sorry we didn't get to it on our regular first 58 minutes of the show, but definitely appreciate you participating in the questions. Are you ready, Rob, to go deep on your week six picks?
I'm actually going to pay attention this week. How about that? I'm going to pay attention and we're going to do it.
So I think we have a really good Thursday night matchup. It's kind of that classic matchup, showdown of rivals, the Denver Bronco versus San Diego Chargers. The Chargers have not been doing well this season, but I think this is one of those games where, you know, rival teams can play really, really close football. The Broncos, and, you know, if you're Broncos fans, sorry, but your offense sucks. Your defense has been winning you games. I've been picking against the Broncos, and they've been winning games. Your offense just is not that good. And we saw a great example of that last week where the Falcons, who I think are the number one offense in the league, just toasted and roasted your team because, you know, you can't shut down an offense that dominant. And I've talked about it. Offenses will win in the regular season. Yes, defenses will win in the postseason, but you just can't shut down a Falcons offense like that, and they couldn't. So that's a Thursday night matchup. I'll let you get a chance to get your pick in first. What do you think about that game, Rob?
Where are they playing in Denver? You said
they're playing in San Diego.
Yeah, that feels like a trap game, frankly.
Right.
Because I mean, Denver defense wins championships, but offense wins games, is what you like to say. I'm not sure I buy that. Defense wins championships. I can see several interceptions in that game.
Absolutely.
And maybe a pick six. And, yeah, I think I actually watched a little bit of the Chargers this past week against the Raiders. The Raiders look really good. They couldn't beat the Raiders, and I don't think they can beat Denver.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to agree. You know, just the football knowledge of where the Broncos are this season. I think it's going to be a very close game, but I think in the end, the Broncos are going to take it. It might come down to the fourth quarter. It might even come down to the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, but I think the Broncos are going to be the winner here.
I would agree.
Start out Sunday morning. And by the way, if you send me your picks, please go to NFL.com and look at the title on the top and pick them in order. It makes my life so much easier when I'm prepping for a show. Thank you.
Oh, I think I did that last week.
You did.
It was an accident, but I did it.
The 49ers, your 49ers, have not had a good season. But, Kaepernick is back. Cap is back on the road. facing the Buffalo Bills, who have surprisingly made a turnaround since firing, I think it was their offensive coordinator, fired their offensive coordinator, and since they fired their offensive coordinator, they beat the Patriots, man. No, it was the Patriots without Tom Brady, but it doesn't matter. A win is a win. So they face the Buffalo Bills at home. I'm going to have to go with the Buffalo Bills at home. I feel like they've got momentum. They're going into a big at-home game. They're coming off of some huge wins here, especially after beating the Patriots. I mean, that's, you know, in my division, the big deal is not whether you get to the championship game. It's whether you beat the Patriots. And they've already got one of them on the board. I'm going to go with the Bills at home.
I'm going to go with the 49ers, and I'm going to tell you why.
This should be good.
I don't know. No, I feel like if they're going to win a game, they could win this one. I don't think the Bills are a very good football team. I don't think the 49ers are very good. They're not. 49ers are not a very good football team. But Kaepernick can win. He's done it in the past, and I know that that's stupid to say. Well, somebody's always won in the past. He's done it in the past. He is a dynamic player, and if they can start the game with a nice drive and he can get into a nice rhythm, I think the 49ers could dominate this game. Not just win it, but win it handily. They've got some if they can open up a lead and they can just start pounding that running game. Kaepernick restructured his contract. It wasn't a big story, but he restructured his contract. He could opt out and be a free agent next year with all the teams that need a quarterback. If he's ever going to do it, now is the time to do it. And I don't think that makes a lot of pressure on him. I think it just opens up a lot of opportunity. And you can look at it one way or the other. There's either pressure or there's opportunity. And if you're an athlete that's ready to take your game to the next level, or you have the skill to take a game to the next level, this is the time that you do it. He's got that skill. And this may be the last time I pick the 49ers this year if they lose. But I feel like they could – I may actually sit down and watch this game just because I want to see what Cap can do in that offense.
There you go. No pressure, Cap, but it's all on you. And I agree. I think it's all on Cap. If Cap comes out and has a big game, that can change the way the season is going for them. But if he comes out and has a bad game, I mean, it's probably all downhill from there.
Well, you say it's all on him, but he's the kind of player, he's the kind of athlete that can take over a game. Like Michael Vick used to be able to.
Elevate the players around him.
Or Randall Cunningham. Anybody. Okay, they're all black quarterbacks. That's not what I mean. It's just they have that skill set. He's got that type of skill set that can dominate a game. If they get that, you know, quick run, the quick momentum. Slant passes, and he can take the ball and run a little bit. I mean, we've seen he's come to within a play of winning the Super Bowl and a couple plays of getting to the Super Bowl. He has that talent, and he doesn't need that talent around him to be able to do it. So I'm curious. I'm honestly curious, and I feel like this may be the last time I pick them. If he comes out and plays the way that he's played in the past, then I'm going to pick him for the rest of the season. Maybe they make the playoffs. Who knows?
It may not be the Super Bowl, but Cap, you got to play like it is a Super Bowl.
Oh, it's his Super Bowl. Absolutely.
It's his Super Bowl. Next up, the poo-poo game of the week, the Jacksonville Jaguars up against the Chicago Bears. Neither team is really – it's a race for the bottom. I'm just going to throw it out there. I don't care about this game. I'm just going to go Jacksonville Jaguars on the road.
Oh, they're in Chicago?
They're in Chicago.
I'll take the Bears. Let's move on.
Very good. Next up, the Los Angeles Rams, who have won games that they probably shouldn't have against the Detroit Lions, who have lost a bunch of games they shouldn't have. And I think somebody posted a stat in Reddit NFL that the differential for the Lions is like 7 points between being 5-0 at this point. I don't know. I mean, my head says I should go with the Rams, but Lions at home, I feel like this is a game they just can't lose. So I'm going to go with the Lions.
Yeah, I'll take the Lions too.
Next up, another team that's in the race for the bottom. The Dolphins are at home, which normally would be a big deal, except they're hosting the Steelers. And Steelers are still pretty healthy. With Roethlisberger at quarterback, I just don't see how I could possibly in any world pick against the Steelers in this game.
Yeah, sorry, I was reading something. What's the Steelers and who?
I thought you were going to pay attention this week.
Just wait, hold on. No, it's the Steelers at Miami. Yeah, Miami's awful. Holy crap. They are awful. And I mean, Have you seen Eric Espinosa's video about how
the he was so upset? And I feel him, man, because, you know, my Jets, like my Jets and power rankings were as high as 28. They're a 31 ranked team this year. They're like, I'm not doing videos, but I feel you, bro. Like,
it's funny. It was funny. I mean, you know, I hope everybody out there in the Miami area is after the hurricanes and everything is okay. I don't know what the damage was like, but that's the kind of thing I don't have to deal with out here. I just have to worry about earthquakes, which I don't even think about, because if a big earthquake comes, I'm screwed. So what are you going to do? But you know, I hope everybody's okay. With that being said, the Dolphins are awful, just dreadful. And they're terrible. And yes, Big Ben and company will steamroll.
Next up, which could be an interesting game if Brady was not back, the Cincinnati Bengals on the road facing the Patriots at home. The Patriots are tough enough at home without Brady being back after just saying, you know, Brady basically came back. And I don't know if you saw, because
just a big middle finger to the rest of the league.
Yeah, I mean, I watch Patriots game not because I like the Patriots. I hate the Patriots, and that, I mean, that's enough said. But, I mean, Brady came out, and if you know, Brady is an amazing athlete. One of the things he sucks at is running. And the guy managed to run like 11 yards for a first down, and I was showing my significant other. Brady took like 11 seconds to run 10 yards. Like, it was just stupid. He's a Clydesdale, and he's just that dominant. And like at home, it's bad enough facing any team at home, but you face the Patriots at home, I'm sorry. Like, the Patriots are going to crush the Bengals. It's not even going to be close.
I think the Pats are just going to win out. They're just going to win out.
I don't know if they're going to lose a game the rest of the season, frankly.
That's what I'm saying. They're going to win out, and they'll probably win the whole thing, because there's something about that system, man. They could line me up at wide receiver, and I probably get 600 yards. Mm-hmm. I just don't know how they do it. I mean, God bless them. And it's in a way, I know it's probably the way that some people talked about the Giants winning World Series with Bochy putting together this team. It's like, who are these guys? And somehow they win. I mean, you've got a couple of Hall of Famers and then a bunch of, you know, whoever's, and somehow they still manage to win for the most part. I watched the 49ers in the 80s and watched them dominate, but they dominated with the best talent all the way around. And somehow the Patriots can do that without the best talent. I don't know how they do it. God bless them. But I can't see them losing ever again.
4-1 with second and third string quarterbacks. I mean, that tells the story. Yeah. The Carolina Panthers, who up until maybe last week I would have picked in this game, facing the Saints at home, without a quarterback that's going to elevate your play, I just can't see how the Carolina Panthers could beat the Saints.
Is what's his name out? Cam's out.
Cam might be like, Cam's got to retire. Like, brother, you got like going to hockey. The only guy in sports that has more concussions than Cam is Sidney Crosby. Like,
I must not have noticed. I didn't realize that
he's got a concussion. Yeah, he's got like two concussions over 3 weeks or 2 weeks. Like, man, like much love to you, because like that's going to have some serious impact your life later on. And I seriously worry about his health, because that kind of stuff has been proven to be bad news for your long-term health. Cam is out. Maybe I'm sure he's a competitor. I'm sure he'll be back later in the season, but without Cam on your team to elevate your game, you're not going to beat the Saints at home. It's just not happening.
Yeah, I'll take the Saints too, and that's too bad. I didn't realize that he was. I saw that there was some whatever, he was hurt or whatever. I didn't realize it was that drastic, but that's too bad. I mean, that's bad for, obviously it's bad for Carolina, but that's bad for the NFL. He's a special player.
He's a special player.
He is. He does stuff on a football field that you watch him with subpar talent. How he made Ted Ginn into a wide receiver, I'll never understand. But. He's special, and that's sad for the NFL, frankly, that he's hurt. So hopefully that long term it's not a thing and he can come back. But yeah, you got to go with the Saints there.
Another game I don't really care about this week: Baltimore Ravens in New York to face off against the Giants. Both teams really not doing very well this season. What are your thoughts on that game?
I just take the Giants. My thoughts are probably the same as yours.
Yeah, I'm just going to pick the Giants because of the home team. I don't. It's not going to be much to watch, and I don't really care, frankly. Cleveland Browns, talk about the race to the bottom.
Doesn't matter. I take the other team.
Yeah, it's Tennessee Titans at home. Tennessee's going to win that game. Yeah. Sorry.
Moving on.
Now, here's an interesting matchup because the Philadelphia Eagles, up until the ass-whooping they took, I think they're still leading their division. And they're facing off against a divisional opponent, the Washington Redskins. Now, Washington has not been playing that bad. I don't really know what to make of this game because I feel like up until this week, the Philadelphia Eagles were really dominant. Is a loss going to, you know, cause them to shore up and play really well this week? I mean, divisional opponent games are really, really tough to pick. So Washington's at home, Eagles on the road.
The interesting thing about when you talk about the NFL on the East Coast, and especially the Northeast, when you talk about the Giants and the Eagles, the media is so tough on them.
So tough.
So tough. And it's just an added element of pressure, right? And no one really will ever talk about it. Oh, well, we don't want to lose because the media is going to rip us. No one will ever say that. They're like, oh, well, we just want to win, blah, 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 whatever. But that's a real thing.
Yeah.
And getting ripped the way that they probably got ripped all week for losing weighs on you.
Yeah.
It's just the same way I swear I was going to talk about baseball, but the same way that the Giants bullpen just completely gave the game away yesterday. I mean, dominant game, should have won. We should be playing in Chicago tomorrow, but they gave it away. They gift wrapped it and handed it over. That bullpen has been crushed, and the Bay Area media is pretty soft. They're pretty accommodating for the most part.
East Coast media goes right for the jugular.
Oh, very, very different. And that bullpen's just been crushed. And it's like once one guy – you have a 3-run lead. Once one guy gets on base, it's like, oh, shit, it's going to unravel.
Yeah.
And I feel like that might be the feeling of the Eagles. If they give up an early lead, oh, shit, it's going to unravel. We're screwed. So, yeah, with that being said, you took Washington?
No, I'm going to take the Eagles in this one.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to take Washington then.
All right, that'll be a good split game. Now, one of the games that I think might be interesting, in the past, not an interesting game, but this week might be a really interesting game, Kansas City Chiefs against the Oakland Raiders. Now, you talk about rivalries. This is one of the oldest rivalries in the league. These teams hate each other, and they play really good football against each other. So if you just threw out the stats of where these teams are in the year, it really doesn't matter because these teams are going to play really good football. It doesn't matter if Kansas was 0-5 and Oakland was 5-0. They're going to play really close football. And this is a tough game for me to pick. Kansas is on the road, Oakland at home. It's an afternoon game.
The Raiders are flying high, man.
Good dog.
They're flying high. And they, conversely to what I was just saying about the media, everybody – like, even I am kind of rooting for the Raiders. And I've been a 49er fan since before I was born. Like,
wow.
Before my parents even decided to have a third child. I'm the youngest, by the way. They and the favorite. What are you going to do? My sisters will never watch this, so I can say stuff like that. But they probably agree. Everybody's pulling for the Raiders. It's amazing. So, yeah, I'm taking the Raiders, man. Like, right now, They're moving the ball. They're flying high. Their offense is playing well. Their defense could, which I thought they were going to be more of a defensive-minded team and the offense would come around, but the offense is there, man.
Yeah.
Crabtree, wow, resurgence. And Derek Carr looks like he's legit. Their running game, I don't know how good their running game's been, but I feel like they can win this game. Absolutely.
Yeah, it'd be tough for me to pick against the Raiders in a game like this, even though it's going to be a close game. I got to go with the home team. Got to go with the Raiders in this one. Now, one of the most interesting games of the week, and I think this really should have been flexed into either the Sunday night game or the Monday night game, because I think this is going to be the game of the week. Dallas Cowboys on the road against the Green Bay Packers.
Okay, so tell me, what's the story with Romo? Is he coming back or what?
So that, I think, is going to be the deciding factor. And, you know, we're doing this on Wednesday, so we don't have the advantage of picking on Saturday morning. I feel like this is one of those games where I would be making my pick at, like, 2 in the afternoon, like, 5 minutes before game time, because Dak has done things that no rookie quarterback, I think, has done in the history of the league. He's come out. He's been a leader. He's been dominant. I think to date, he has not thrown a single interception, which no other quarterback in the league can claim, especially not a rookie quarterback. But they're facing a dominant Packers team with Rodgers at the helm in Green Bay. In Green Bay, you know, talk about teams that are at home. Packers, that's a tough team to play at home, but the Cowboys have just been, they've, you know, talk about good teams find ways to win, bad teams find all the ways to lose. It's going to be the game of the week. I just don't see how this is not going to be the game of the week. This is going to be a game to watch this week. I'll just throw it out there. I got to go with the Cowboys in this one.
Well, we're going to defer on this. I'm going to go with the Packers. I think Dak, that's his name, right?
Dak
Prescott. That's a great name. It's a superstar name. Good for him. And he's played well. Frankly, I don't know that the pressure's really been on him. The expectations are probably set pretty low. And you know, he's played like he's great. Rookie quarterback, awesome. Comes in, great. Now the pressure is there. Because now people expect you to do something special. Now you're going on the road and you're playing a really good team. I don't know who they've beat so far this year. And now with Romo coming back to health, and I don't know if who's going to play what, are they really going to bench Tony Romo? I bet fans want him to. I see people posting things on Instagram. I have some friends on Instagram and Facebook who are Cowboys fans. And the only thing more insufferable than a Cubs fan this year is a Cowboys fan. I mean, you got the Cowboys win, and it's like you have to shut down the nation. Everybody gets a day off because the Cowboys won. And it's just because everybody expected the Cowboys to suck, and now they're good because Dak is, you know, he's not just rookie of the year. He's MVP now, apparently. So now there's real pressure. It's like, okay, kid, keep it going. And I hope he does. I hope he proves me wrong. But this will be a reality check for the Cowboys, I think. You go into Lambeau, you're playing Green Bay, who has a Hall of Fame quarterback and knows how to win football games. That's a tough, tough task. And I'm going to go with the Green Bay Packers.
I mean, not to beleaguer the pick here, but this is one of those that goes back to, and we've talked about it online, and there's been the big discussion. It's the Bledsoe Brady thing all over again, except for the fact that Romo is a better football player. I mean, whatever you think about the Cowboys, Romo is a lifetime much better player than Bledsoe. But do you really bench a quarterback who has taken your team, and your team is now 4-1 at the top of the division? Do you really bench a quarterback that's got that much momentum behind him? He's got so many wins behind him, and then bench him for Romo, who has been inconsistent at best. And so, you know, my pick is the Cowboys. My asterisk for this week, not that I can really do that, you start Romo, they're going to lose that game. You start Dak, I think they're going to win this game.
Yeah, it's tough. I'm not sure what they're going to do. I'm looking up for some news on Tony Romo here.
There's no way they're going to tip their hand before game time. Like, that's going to be a Saturday morning, Sunday morning announcement for sure. There's no way they're going to tip that before the game.
The most recent news on Tony Romo from October 11th, which was yesterday, the doctors have confirmed that the compression fracture in Tony Romo's back has healed. That's all we've got. So he's healed. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to play him. I think that gives – they can take their time with Romo, and I think that they might. I have a feeling he won't start this week, but he's looming to potentially start next week, and that means there's pressure for Dak Prescott, right? He hasn't had that pressure. It's like, hey, kid, go out and do your best. And God bless him, he's done well. But now it's like, okay, now, kid, you have to earn it, because if Romo comes back and he's healthy and his back is healed and everything, whatever, we can afford one more week. But next week, if you lose, I probably have to start him. So if you lose, you lose your job. So now he's playing for his job. A little bit different.
Yeah. I just like to say that this is where I'm at with this Futuro Selection Suprema. You can see how little is left, and it's still amazing. I'm going to smoke this thing right down to the nub.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. It looks big when I put it that close to the camera. Just by the band here.
So last interesting game of the week here, Falcons on the road against the Seattle Seahawks, who really haven't been great this season. Falcons 4-1, Seahawks 3-1, both of them leading the division. So, you know, it's not going to be telling for the divisional matchups, but every game is a must win in the NFL. What's your take on that?
You know, I don't like the Seahawks. I haven't liked the Seahawks for a while. I really dislike Pete Carroll. And I've actually had personal interactions with Pete Carroll, and he's kind of a jackass. You know, I'm going to root for the Falcons because, you know, Han Solo flew the Millennium Falcon, and that's enough for me. But no, I have no vetted interest in either of these teams, although I do have several Seahawks on my fantasy team. Not starting any of them this week, so they can all go suck it. I'm going to take the Falcons.
Yeah, it'd be good week to bring your benched quarterback into active play. I mean, tough decision. Steelers against Dolphins, Falcons against Seahawks. I mean, that's
not a tough decision. Big Ben staying in the lineup. Yeah.
All right, fair enough. I'm definitely going with the Falcons in this one. I think the Falcons are going to show why they're winning games, and this is going to be one of those games. Now we get into the poo-poo games of the week, which, again, I don't know why the NFL didn't flex these games. The Sunday night game, the Colts on the road against the Houston Texans without J.J. Watt. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, probably the Texans, I guess.
I'm going to go with the Colts, believe it or not. I don't really care. But
whatever coin flip game of the week, we chose opposites. That's good.
Now, the worst game of the week, which has somehow been put as the Monday night game, and I want to apologize to all the people out there still listening, tuning into our podcast, listening live. My Jets on the road against Arizona Cardinals. It's not going to be much of a game to watch. As much as I'd love to be a fanboy and pick my Jets, they're just not going to win this game. And I don't even know if they've got two or three wins left in the rest of the season. Cardinals are going to win this one. It's going to be a low-scoring affair, and it's going to be an awful game to watch.
Yeah, Carson Palmer is going to come back. He's playing this week. It just sounds like you're right. It's not going to be that entertaining. I like the fact that I've got David Johnson starting this week, and they're projecting him to get 20 points, which to me says he's going to have a good game. I'm into that. He's a dynamic player. 27 carries for 157 and 2 touchdowns against the 49ers. Unreal. You got to go with the Cardinals here.
Yeah, look for 2 or 3 touchdowns from him, because the Jets defense has just been garbage. They've been garbage on short passes, and they're the worst team in the league at passes over 20 yards. So, Palmer, just throw 20-yard bombs, and you're going to score all day long.
Yeah, watch those passes over 20 yards. Wow. They're the worst team in the league defending passes over 20 yards?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's not a stat you want.
No.
Ouch.
No, I think they're actually sitting at either 31 or 32 in the league on defense. Terrible. Mm-hmm. Terrible. I'm going to wear my jersey. I'm going to drink a lot of whiskey on Monday night, and it's going to be a terrible, terrible game.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm right there with you.
So that wraps us up on our NFL picks for this week. Like I said, if you want to get in on the fun, get your name on the show, surgeon@cigarfederation.com. Get your picks in before Thursday. I need your picks for the week. That's how we roll. And as we were sharing our pairings, drink better, but drink less.